Hi, I'm Dr. Daniela Stein, and today I have Dr. Rikin Patel with me. Welcome, Dr. Patel. It's so good to have you here. So when I first heard about Dr. Patel, I could not wait to meet him. He's a phenomenal pediatric doctor with further training in lifestyle medicine. So you did your diploma in lifestyle medicine for the American Board of Lifestyle Medicine.
That's right.
And we did our exam at the same time, so we became certified at the same time. And Dr. Patel is very well trained. You did training, you've done training in the US, in the UK, in Canada, in Granada. So apart from having been trained at all these phenomenal universities, you also have an understanding of how people and kids are a little bit different with a different type of culture, different type of eating habits, and so importantly, how these different lifestyles impact children. So I'm so happy to have you here. You have a great reputation. Patients love working with you. I'm super excited. So let's just start right away and tell me a little bit more, what is lifestyle medicine?
Yes. So first, before we get started, Daniela, I wanted to really thank you for having me here today. I really appreciate all the work you're doing, and I can't wait for us to work together more.
Good. Oh, you're so welcome.
I really wanted to share my appreciation before we get started.
Oh, you're welcome. Yes. And some of our listeners might be familiar with lifestyle medicine, because I talk about lifestyle medicine all the time. But if we have listeners today, and I know we have listeners all over the world, so maybe someone who hasn't heard about lifestyle medicine before, can you tell us a bit, what is lifestyle medicine?
Yeah, sure. So lifestyle medicine is using lifestyle principles to serve as interventions to help not only prevent, but also address chronic diseases. So for example, we usually talk about the six pillars of lifestyle medicine, and they include nutrition, restorative sleep, physical activity, stress resilience and how we deal with stress, our social connections and our relationships, as well as mitigating, dealing with risky substances. So those are the six lifestyle principles that we not only use, again, as we mentioned, for prevention, but also as a primary intervention to deal with chronic diseases, with the goal of treating the root cause for reversal. So that's a little bit different than our conventional day-to-day medicine, which tends to focus more on symptom management. And lifestyle medicine really wants to go that extra step further to try to reverse the condition at its root cause.
And when we studied for lifestyle medicine, we've gone through all the research showing that it makes a big difference. Eating healthy makes a difference. You don't just have bad genes, or the things that you do can make a significant difference. So some people do have genetic risk for heart disease, diabetes, but the way you live and the way you eat can significantly make a difference whether you are going to one day get dementia or one day have heart disease. So you actually have a lot of power with the lifestyle that you choose.
Yeah. So what you're speaking to is this idea of epigenetics, yes, where our day-to-day habits impact how our genes get expressed. They turn off and turn on certain genes that can express disease. So I always explain to families that we are born with a certain set of genes that we are, you know, endowed with. However, our lifestyle is that there's such a growing area now of epigenetics where they're studying how our day-to-day habits and lifestyle can actually impact our long-term health and the expression, and also the not expression of certain diseases.
And that's big. That is big. So I've done a podcast on that. That was 3 years ago. Second podcast. But then especially with kids, that's very big. If you have children and you know grandma had dementia, grandpa had heart disease, what are the things that I can do to prevent my kids' chances of having that? That is so powerful to know. What I feed my kids, what I teach my kids, you know, the amount of screen time that I allow for my kids. And you even had like a whole webinar where you inform families on screen time. And that's what I really like about your practice. For you, it's really about informing people, giving that education, enabling people. And that's our goal with our podcast today, giving people tools, things that they can easily implement, small things, small changes, easily implement to make a big difference in their children's lives. And kids are so, why do you want to work with kids? Tell me, I'm passionate about kids because I have three kids and I know how important it is. But from your journey, you love working with kids,
right? Yeah, sure. So I'll just start and say that I had an affinity for working with kids, even going back to before medical school. I had this ability to connect with kids of all ages, and I just loved being with kids. And so then when that was there beforehand, but then when I got into medical school, what I was finding is that I'd meet so many adults with, they'd have multiple chronic conditions, COPD, heart failure, liver failure, and so many different things. And we would want to talk about how this was connected to certain lifestyle habits that they had, but they weren't willing to change anything. And so for me, I wasn't really inspired by that. I thought I chose pediatrics because I see pediatrics as the future health of society, right? And to me, I was very inspired to make a difference early on when there was where kids are much more impressionable to impact and have that downstream effect. So I really see my inspiration comes because kids have what I call, they have a longer runway. And that longer runway gives us an opportunity if we start earlier, and we know that if we start early, the impact is greater. Because a lot of times there's research to show that actually the food decisions we make and the dietary patterns we have in the first 20 years of our life, that has the most impact on developing chronic diseases versus the changes we make later in life.
Which is quite significant. So it has two components. The one is, as they're saying, train away the way a child the way they should go, and they won't depart from it. So if you train your kid to eat healthy, to be used to lots of activity, to prioritize sleep, the child will keep with that. So it's on the one hand those habits, but then on the other hand it's that physical health that you've built into the DNA, into every cell with those healthy foods, with those healthy choices.
Right.
And that's incredible. Being a mom myself, I know that, my heart's desires for my kids would be a good career or someone being happily married. But all those things are not as helpful if you're not healthy. And I see it in hospital every day where people will be sick, maybe chronic renal disease, on dialysis. And their parents, would have maybe, it's so devastating if you have a kid with illness and there are things that you maybe could have done that could have helped to prevent that. That's way more important than a fancy degree or a fancy future spouse. It's like really that your health. And that's our desire for every parent to have that optimal health for our kids. And that's why you're today. For all our listeners, to give takeaways, things that you can do to help your kid to obtain that optimal health. So let's start with our pillars of health. And then if you can tell our listeners today, if we go through the pillars of health, something small that people can implement, to something they can take home to optimize their kid's nutrition.
I can start with the pillars. So these are some just overarching principles that we can take out of, and there's many for each, but I'll talk about maybe just one or two. For example, let's start with nutrition. Nutrition has such a huge impact on our health. And a couple of things that families can take away that I always talk about first is let's add more fiber to our diet, right? Fruits, vegetables, whole grains. There's been a huge transition in the Canada Good Food guidelines where now half the plate is now fruits and vegetables, and the implementation of whole grains, but also that big shift where it's actually removed meat as a food group and it's substituted just with a protein as a guideline, because there's more of an emphasis on plant proteins, right? And plant proteins, the other great thing about that is also they're high in fiber as well. So again, increasing fiber in a variety of ways is really, really powerful in so many ways, because what it does is we're focusing now on, you can eat more of it, but because it's lower energy density, right, it actually has that ability, fiber has that ability to expand in our stomach and have and cater to that satiety and that feeling of fullness that we all need, but really can be answered by fiber. So increasing fiber in our diet. The other is just quick second thing on nutrition is for families just to watch out about how the ultra processed foods that are within their house, right? I always empower families, especially parents, and let them know that they are they set the culture, the food culture in their home. So if we want our kids not, having the option for things, the real work starts, not even bring into the home, and the real work happens at the grocery store in the planning before. So that's just on something on nutrition to consider.
And that's what I often tell moms, you know, you don't have to at that birthday party have to scour the loot bag and throw everything out and tell, oh, your kid is not allowed to eat this cake because of this or that. Because it's not the birthday party or those few social interactions that's really the problem. We eat 80-90% at home. So if you can make sure that at home you're giving your kid this healthy, healthy building blocks, then it's okay if your kid is at a birthday party and eat some sugar or this or that. That's okay. Our focus is that 80% at home.
Yeah, that 80-20 rule that, you know, if we're doing 80% correct, you know, as best as we can in the home, then the 20% where there's birthdays or special occasions, no problem. Treats are totally, you know, fine.
And it's sometimes hard, but that's what I love about your approach is, and I know that's why patients love going to you, because you would also then connect them with someone on your team, a dietitian, a health coach, to help with these things. Because sometimes parents kind of feel a loss because there's so much nutrition advice out there. What should I follow? So then they can, your clients can see you, your patients can see you, but then also have the dietitian, have the health coach help them through that. Yeah. So that's very helpful. Okay, then the next pillar.
So we're talking about restorative sleep. So sleep is such a I always tell families when we're doing our sleep education sessions that I want you to sleep as your child's superpower. Right? It should be a superpower.
But it's so hard. My kids don't want to sleep. They have FOMO. They're like, no, they want to be up.
It is a skill that takes practice. But I'm going to focus just on two things today is first the environment, and second is on routine. So first, I'd love to tell all parents just to be mindful of when their kid is going to bed and just trying to dial it back and making it a little bit earlier. Because we know the American Academy of Pediatrics did a study in 2019 that showed kids ages 6 to 17, 50% are not getting enough sleep. So again, just increasing the number of hours of sleep. We know now that they've done long-term studies where they've showed actually parts of your brain, the gray matter, are actually a little bit shrunk, and they're areas that are responsible with emotional dysregulation, decision-making. And so again, all of these, and I always attach to parents that better sleep gives us better control of the decisions we make. And so I often make that connection between your child sleeping better will also better allow them to make decisions about what they're putting in their mouth as well. So again, sleep hours, but then the second is also sleep environment. And so this is really going to go to right away of just speaking to not having screens, but right before bed. At least 60 to 90 minutes before bed, no screens, have some other type of routine. And that's because the blue light from screens impacts our melatonin. And that melatonin is what's responsible not only for helping us fall asleep. So kids are struggling with falling asleep, but it also impacts our total sleep hours. Yeah. So those are two things.
So that's very big. So that's for adults all the time. When I have adults who come here and tell me they have a hard time losing weight, they can't lose weight. Then before we touch food, we just optimize sleep. And quite often people lose weight because if your sleep is not optimized and you're tired during the day, then you need to eat more. And then you tend to eat more carbohydrate-rich, sugar-high foods that give you that energy boost. Exactly same thing with your kids, right? So you need for your kids to sleep. And then that screen time is a big thing. And I know for my kids, it's hard. I'm not saying it is easy. We're not coming, you know, we're not standing on our ivory tower and say, oh, you've got to do that. We've got to do that. But then if you find that you struggle with your kids with tantrums, emotional outbursts, rather than saying, don't throw a tantrum, it's sometimes helpful to look back and say, is my kid sleeping enough? Is it maybe because of lack of adequate sleep that my child has a harder time regulating emotions?
Yeah.
So that's big. Great point. And then that sleep hygiene, the dark bedroom. I know my kids always want their bedtime light. They want this, they want that. You must be strict and say, no, we sleep in the dark. Blackout blinds, blackout curtains, you know, because we know that sleep environment is so important.
Yeah.
That light. And then also it really helps for your whole biological clock for your kids to get out in the morning, first thing in the morning, to be exposed to daylight, go for a walk after dinner, to be exposed to natural light, and try to avoid screen time.
Yeah. Personal anecdote for myself is that the moment I started wearing eye shades to sleep, it was it transformed my sleep quality. I could feel that I had, you know, I had deeper sleep and had more energy just by having like something to cover my eyes, so I wasn't going to expose any extra light. That was a really big change for myself.
Oh, that's big. That's very big. Okay, good. Next pillar. So we spoke about nutrition. We spoke about quality sleep. What's the next one?
Physical activity. So physical activity, really, really simple, is just have our kids sweating every day, or at least most days of the week. And you can choose a variety of exercises. I always tell families to, you know, ask the child, what do you like to do? And, you know, make it fun. Fun is the key for kids getting to do physical activity, but sweating every day. And a lot of times families will tell me that my children walk to school and they do a lot of walking. We go for a walk. And I say, that is great, because that physical activity is better than sedentary activity. However, I always want to point families to our physical activity guidelines that are really emphasizing regular physical activity that is moderate to vigorous. Now, a way families can kind of help judge that is something simple called the talk test, or the sync test. And so generally, if we are talking together here, we're able to sing a song, that would be considered low. That would be considered low physical activity, where our heart rate hasn't been raised to a certain amount. If we're saying small little sentences, but we can no longer sing, that's moderate. And where we're just now saying words, but we can't actually say any sentences, that's that vigorous physical activity.
And that's so, quite vigorous. For us, that's like going on a run.
Yeah.
Because if you just go on a, I love running with friends, but then we talk lots. So that means it's not vigorous yet, right?
Yeah.
You've got to run at a proper speed to not be able to. Yeah.
So I again, like the walking is great, and I always want to encourage as much walking as we can every day, because again, it's reducing our sedentary time. When there's been so much research now on the number of hours we're sitting and the long-term health impacts of that. But really, we really want to emphasize that moderate, vigorous physical activity is very essential, and we should be working towards that.
Okay, good. So, and then our next pillar.
So we have our next pillar is stress resilience. How
that's
we're combating stress.
That's big. I didn't realize how much stress kids are under. You know, we always say, oh, kids, life used to be good, or it's easy to be a kid. It's not. Nowadays, it's not easy to be a kid anymore. Our kids are under an incredible amount of stress.
Yeah. And I can't, you know, I always tell families that stress is, you know, it's like paying taxes. It's guaranteed. It's coming to us. So we really need to empower our children to have better, you know, armor, better shields, right? And so one of the things that I'll always, you know, talk to parents about, because stress isn't contributing a lot to mental health conditions like anxiety. So I'm always talking to my families about having some sort of practice of deep breathing, meditation. Again, everyone knows that weights make our muscles bigger. I talk about how meditation and deep breathing, it makes our brain bigger and it makes our brain stronger. So again, we're creating that resilience to be able to combat the stress that's coming to us. So that's one thing to consider. And there's so many resources and apps that we can share on how to do that better if you need to get started. And then the second thing that I really want to talk about, which is, again, I always talk about these principles being simple but not easy, but more time in nature. There's so much research on how time in nature, it's good for our heart health. It helps us regulate our mood. Our sleep is better. We have reduced inflammation and pain. But again, just coming back to nature, putting our feet on the ground, again, really easy tool that's available to all of us pretty much at any time to help combat stress.
And that's big. It's big to just know it. Even if that's just the one takeaway that you can have from today's talk, to when you're home with your kids, rather than just some studies they've done where kids would walk just in a neighborhood versus walking in the woods. If the kids that did their walk through trees, they're focus was better, their ADHD was less, they had better emotional regulation just by spending that time going for their walk through the woods. So that's big.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So let's focus on that.
Nature.
Yes. Next one.
So the next one would be managing risky substances. And so I think of risky substance for pediatrics and children in kind of three prongs. One is this group of, I see ultra-processed food as a risky substance that kids have to manage.
And it's important to know because parents don't always know how risky those Fruit Loops are.
Yeah. The second group that I see is kids now being exposed to vaping and smoking, and that's a risky substance that needs to be managed. And the third, which is the one we can talk about a little bit more, is screen time. And so screens being also that risky, what at least for children, that risky substance that we need to be aware about, because we know that there's so much research now that screen times are at its all-time high, but it's coming with increased challenges with mental health, increased sedentary time, which is contributing to kids being overweight and obese. And so really, really focusing on trying to, and again, as we mentioned, sleep, impacting sleep, but again, really focusing on watching out, having, being aware first of all, that there are screen guidelines by the Canadian Pediatric Society, and trying to develop a plan with your family, a screen plan for your family. But it's really, really powerful. There's a lot of studies that have showed that parents really determine their, can really have an impact on their screen time by also managing their own screen time. So this is really an opportunity for all of us to try to be the example. Yeah. I always talk about this one story with families that there was a boy who was really, he really liked eating sweets. And so the mom would always try to tell his boy, you know, this is not good for you, but he would keep asking for it and they would keep eating it. But then at some point he became overweight. And this is a story from very long time, ancient times, but it talked about how they went, mom realized she needed some help. And so they went to the village elder and teacher. And so they went to, and the mother went to say, and the mother asked, he's like, can you tell my son to stop eating these sweets? And the village elder teacher, he realized that he likes sweets himself. So he said, come back in a month's time. And so they came back in a month's time. But in that month, the village elder also stopped eating sweets himself. And so then when they came back, he told the child, he says, your mom is really trying to take care of your health. We really need to want to encourage you to stop eating sweets. And he explained why, and it really landed with the child, and he stopped, he really became more mindful about eating sweets. And so then the mother asked, she's like, why didn't you say the same thing a month ago? And he said, I really like eating sweets. So I actually had to give it up myself first before I could tell him, this boy, to do it. And to me, it was such a powerful story that really speaks to us being the agents of change and trying to be good examples for others to follow.
Yeah, and that speaks of screen time. And my kids watch, because I would always say, oh, you can't have screen time. And then they're, oh, but mom, you're on your screen. So I think that's quite important. And I would tell my kids no screen time before bedtime. But oh my goodness, if they catch me in my bed checking emails, let me know that.
Yeah, for sure. They keep us accountable.
They watch, yes.
They keep us honest. And, and so I always tell families in our clinics that I said, although we've come here for your child, but I want you to see this as an opportunity for the whole family.
Yeah, for sure.
Because we don't want to single out the children, right? We want this to
especially with weight loss. But other things as well. You don't put your kid on a diet and say, oh, you've got to lose weight. No, it doesn't work like that. The whole family adopts healthy eating patterns, and then the kids just get the same healthy food as everyone else.
Right. And so, again, when we take it from a family perspective, it also shines a light on everybody to improve rather than just singling out one or two specific people in the family.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's important. Yes. And it's doable. It's doable. Quite often people will think, no, it's too hard, but then you don't have to aim for no screen time.
Yeah.
Small changes, just like those small, like atomic habits,
right?
Small changes,
definitely.
And it becomes easier.
1% change if we're making, that's really powerful. You know, with even respect to nutrition, they did a really big study in JAMA. And they found that even when we take the foods, we transition even 3%, where we transition from animal protein to plant protein, they found that just 3%, which could be part of just one meal in a week, they found that it reduced all-cause mortality by 10%.
Oh, wow.
And so the reason I emphasize this always to families is that even small changes make a big difference.
Yeah, that's big.
Yeah. And so we have our sixth pillar.
Yes.
Our sixth pillar is social connections and relationships. And so the one thing that I really want to bring families to with this pillar is just coming back and focusing on family mealtime. And the reason why I wanted to bring that to everyone's attention is because they've done a lot of research actually on the power of the family meal. Unfortunately, over the last three decades, it's been declining. The family meal has been on the decline. But if we look at the research, it's really powerful and encouraging and inspiring, actually, that if we're having family meals with our younger kids, so our infants, we found that family meals, it promotes better language development. It promotes, better behaviors in our children. So that's with our younger children. Our kids who are a little bit older, so after 6 years old, we found that family meals, there's links to increase better academic performance, eating more fruits and vegetables, and closer relationships with siblings. And then finally, in the teenage years, the family meal has been a really powerful vehicle for, it's been shown that families that have family meals, kids are more likely to get A's, so better academic performance.
Wow.
And two, there is reduced risky behaviors in our teens, which again is a very valid concern for all families at that age group. So again, to me, and then not only that, reduce mental health conditions like anxiety and depression, again, in the teenage years when families are having meals together. So again, just highlighting in this social connection, again, there's many things, but just the power of the family meal.
And small changes. And then same thing, we don't think it's easy. It's so because at night, you know, you have all your different sports because the kids are in school. They're then typically at night, kids will have their hockey and soccer and all their different sports. So it's very, very easily to be running around every night to different sports and not have the meal. So you have to intentionally protect mealtime. You have to book activities. My kids are only allowed way less things than they would love to do specifically for this. So it's hard, but it's doable. You know, sometimes people say, I don't have money for certain healthy foods. But now for this, we have money, but maybe it's more important to invest our time into our kids than to just be running off at different sports. The other thing that I find when we have family meal together is we also cook together.
Yeah.
So no kids like to cook ever. But if you involve your kids with going to the grocery store, with choosing the menu, with choosing the veggies they're going to eat, because they're going to eat veggies, it's non-negotiable, but they can choose the veggies they want to eat. You have way more buy-in that they'll actually eat the food, because that's devastating as a parent. If you cook this meal and everyone is at the dinner table and all the kids just don't want to eat your food. But I found that's helpful for me to take them with me to the grocery store, to have them do the meal planning with me and then make the food with me. If they took half an hour to help prepare a meal, they're way more likely to eat that meal.
Yeah, and you're giving the opportunity for them to be part of the creation, right?
Yeah.
Kids love to, their creativity gets, promoted there. And they like to, then try something they've had their hands in. So, again, that aspect of making food together, again, another great suggestion for social connection. But really then connecting kids, to helping them with their food choices by getting them involved with that too.
So my patients love to be referred to you. They want to be referred to you because you're also known as a holistic doctor, right? You're very open-minded. You know when to refer to tell someone, yes, maybe acupuncture might be helpful, seeing a naturopath might be helpful. I'll put your details below for anyone who wants to be referred to you. If you're in Ontario, you can get your doctor to refer you to Dr. Patel or to refer your children to Dr. Patel. And then you do it very easily via online. So there is no waiting in a lineup somewhere in a clinic driving to Toronto. You'll see people online. And that's for everyone in Ontario.
This is our Reset Clinic.
Yes. So let's chat a little bit about this Reset Clinic.
Sure. So the Reset Clinic came as an inspiration. So where I work in Scarborough, we have a lifestyle clinic that specifically targets kids with obesity, and it's a wonderful clinic. I really enjoy being a part of it. And I saw to myself, wow, although it's focusing on kids with obesity, I really wanted to kind of break that conception that often is there, that lifestyle principles are there just for kids with obesity. And so really this Reset Clinic, one of the inspirations was really to open up lifestyle opportunities and lifestyle principles for kids with a variety of chronic conditions. And you know, the reason why we wanted to go with the name Reset Pediatrics is like, what's one of the words you think about when you hear about the word reset?
Oh, I don't know. I think about starting a video from the beginning.
Yeah. So a reset, you know, to us, it means like a new beginning.
Yes.
A fresh start.
Yes. Yes, for sure.
A new chance. And so
a clean slate.
Yeah. Clean slate. Right. And so what was great about reset, because eventually we'd love, you know, although we want to help people that need the help with their health, we also want to see reset as an opportunity for everybody, right? That reset opportunity, even for myself, like I need a reset at some point, right? I need to reset my sleep. So hopefully in the future we'll have, you know, programs around resetting relationships, resetting sleep, resetting our diet, you know, resetting our physical activity. But again, that idea of reset that, you know, if you're doing good, great, but we always, you know, we want to encourage people to also reset to be better.
Good.
So that's just some, you know, inspiration, inspiration behind where the Reset name came from, you know, that we really want to, and we wanted to keep it, again, virtual to start with as an opportunity for people to have accessibility. So we're really fortunate that we have a great team. We have two social workers on our team. We have a dietitian, but in addition, we have a parenting coach. We have a sleep coach, we have a yoga therapist, and we have a Tai Chi and Qigong master who's on our team because of my background in martial arts and Kung Fu. And so we have this team really there because, you know, from what I've gained over the last many years being in this, having this interest of lifestyle, is that you need to have a multi-pronged approach. It's not just one person.
And that's critical. That's essential to your success, to your success, to our patients listening, to have that support. Like parenting, it's one thing for us to say, oh, your kids have to sleep more. But if your kids don't sleep at night, then you really need that sleep coach.
Yeah.
Or if you have to tell your child less screen time, more veggies. But you don't have that healthy relationship with your kid, then you're going to start first with the parenting coach. And how do I establish that trust with my kids? How do I reset my relationship with my kid, right? Because that relationship is at the core. And only once you're in a good relationship with your kid, then we start working on the food and the sleep and the screen time and the what. And that's what I quite often tell people when they say, oh, just tell my kid to do this and that. Like, no, our most important thing is that relationship first. So talk to that parenting coach. And then once, when your relationship is restored, then you work on the other things.
Yeah, one of my mentors, he always says that everything can happen because if the relationship is strong, then that's the foundation. And from that, everything can spring and grow from there.
Yeah, no, that's critical. It's phenomenal, the work you're doing. I'm so happy for
Thank you.
We're going to get a healthy generation, and that's important to all of us. We need our next generation to be healthy, to be strong, to be resilient, to have healthy bodies, healthy minds, and you're enabling that. Thank you so much for the work you do.
No, thank you. It's incredible.
I'll have links below for Dr. Patel. He often offers, oh, and that's the thing, we were just talking about the services that you offer, but then with the Reset Clinic, you have coaches who can help people worldwide.
Yeah.
So which the same resources to help parents who's listening, because I know we have podcast listeners from all over the world. If you want to reach out, we'll have the links below. Small changes that you implement in your kid's life now will have lifelong phenomenal results. It's so wonderful to see people making these small changes. And I would really like to encourage our listeners, invest in your health, invest in your child's health, invest in your family, make these small changes and get the support.
Yeah, no, it is. It's for me, like my story and lifestyle happened, like it started for me as a child. I started out, I've been doing martial arts, Kung Fu for the last 35 years. And my journey really started as when I was starting Kung Fu. I started when I was 7. And for me, it really provided a container for me to really, you know, it provided community, it provided physical activity, it provided mentorship. And then I got to, when I was 18, I tested for my black sash test, which is our test where we to be a teacher. And although I had been always physically active, one really big thing that changed at that time, because when you're testing for something like that, it was a 6-hour test. So it is like an elite event, and we were, you know, there was training 5-6 times a week. But one thing that really transformed for me is I really cleaned up what I was eating. So for example, at that time, I really knew that, you know, juice and pop and things like that weren't serving me. So I actually stopped it for that period of time. And now it's been, you know, 25 years later that I haven't had like any like soft drink or pop.
Good
right?
for you.
And so I just wanted to share like how starting young and using different experiences that we have in our life can really be great seeds to plant. Well,
that's inspiring.
Then.
Yeah.
And that was just kind of one change that happened in that time that was really has had a long lasting effect.
And set you up for success the rest of your life. That's phenomenal.
I'm still working at things.
If you can avoid all processed things, all sugar, you won't get type 2 diabetes ever. You won't get cardiometabolic disease, you know, and it's so clear. And that's what we learn in lifestyle medicine. That's why we're so passionate about what we're doing.
Yeah, for sure.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Dr. Patel, for
spending time with us. Thank you so much, Daniela, for having me.
It was great having you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks. Take care.
Take care.